Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. It is now Hutton O'Clock, a little bit later than usual this week, given the Mike Vrabel and Will Levis press conferences. So Jonathan Hutton joins us now. Hutton, appreciate you being flexible with our schedule today.
Sure, of course. Of course.
So Mike Vrabel announced on Monday that he decided to part ways with special teams coordinator Craig Aukerman after the special teams nightmare on Sunday. What was your initial reaction to that move?
Well, it was a move that to me was bound to happen after that game. I mean, the way that those plays went down was embarrassing. And for the second punt, which was, you know, more or less a fumble, because before Stonehouse could try to get the punt off, his knee was injured, and the player didn't even have to like lay out to go after the actual ball, just ran through him, and ran right by the Titans offensive line. Four snaps after the same thing happened, where they overloaded the left side of the front on the punt with the first one that was returned for a touchdown. I would just say embarrassing. And there's no doubt that after a game like that, in the season that it's been, where they are finding, you know, bad teams find new and creative ways to beat themselves. And the Titans did exactly that after doing so many things well against the Colts. And when you add all of that into a season that has been, you know, we got to coach them up and do all these different things, and players have to execute. That was the epitome of everything. Coming to a boiling up to the surface. And that's something we don't see, quite frankly, with some of the worst teams in NFL history, let alone what we saw on Sunday against their rival at home in the AFC South.
And Mike Vrabel was asked about it today. Paul Kuharsky asked him the question, did you have conversations with Amy Adams-Strunk before making the move? And Mike Vrabel said, I talk with Amy a lot, and then just kind of walked off the podium, not really willing to entertain questions about why that move was motivated. Do you think that was an Amy Adams-Strunk, an ownership-motivated move? And if so, what does that mean for this team?
Well, I mean, do I think it was encouraged? Sure, I do. I think the fan base would encourage it, too, based on what they saw. But do I think that Vrabel was told what he has to do on his staff immediately? No, I don't. Because, I mean, Todd Downing stuck around after the DUI when they came back from a win against Green Bay, and things got really rough down the final stretch of the season there, where Vrabel's had control. Think about the coaches that have had control of their staffs. All do, but specifically just here. I don't think Vrabel's the type of coach that gets told that he has to get rid of a coach immediately and just stand back and do it immediately and answer a question the way he did today. The way he answered this today was similar to me to how he answered questions about whether or not he was being kept in the loop on the general manager search throughout the final seven games or so of the season last year. Call me naive there, but I don't think Vrabel's the type of guy that's just going to do something to his staff if he wants to wait until the offseason. I think this is a Vrabel initiated move to his staff, one that was needed, and one that he's not done before. He made a change in season, and I don't think that came easy to him.
Yeah, I'm sure it was an easy decision, you know, that he had to make. But I think back to Hutt, to, you know, the firing of Mike Mularkey and him not wanting to, you know, relieve the team of the offensive coordinator at the time.
Right, so right. Munchak was the same way.
And that ultimately was the decision made. So maybe Amy had a hand in that too via the GM at the time, John Robinson. And John said, listen, either you need to change some things from a coaching standpoint, and Mularkey chose not to, and ultimately we believe that is why he ended up getting fired. So there could be something to that as well, because this is something that we have not seen from Mike, and it makes no sense to fire a guy when you're completely out of the playoffs. Now, if you want to do it because it was just that embarrassing, okay, but I would tend to believe that there's a possibility the owner was disgusted with what happened and said, hey, listen, you need to make some changes.
No doubt. Mace, no doubt she was, right? But, again, this is if you're behind the scenes here, mm-hmm. And you're just, I'm just trying to think of when to step in and when not to. Mm-hmm. Stepping in out of the playoff race and making a change at the special team spot, it was needed, mm-hmm. but I don't think now it's not like you add any playoff presence or you're preparing for the offseason any more than what you were. Mm-hmm. That would have been earlier. And I mean, look, let's go down this path a little bit. If Vrabel wanted to play Tannehill over Levis, then I mean, it's got to go back to ownership there too. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was a, you must do this now. I don't think that's how it goes down. I do think it was emotional, you know, from just a pissed off standpoint, I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And that's just my opinion of it. And I think it started on Sunday evening, right? Like that's when it would have gone down. And it should have. I'm not saying that ownership wouldn't sign off on it or shouldn't encourage it or say this needs to happen. When are you doing it? But I don't think Vrabel just automatically jumps and does it if he's frustrated over the fact that he doesn't want to change his staff until the offseason.
Now, Hutch, should we think too much into, because this will be the second time that this happened, and I'm not talking about the coaching.
Right.
I'm talking about players being released and then players subsequently putting something out on social media.
Yeah.
Cryptic codes of it wasn't our fault. There's more going yep. on than what is being, you know, talked about. You had, you know, defensive tackle. After he gets released, he puts out a cryptic text. Now you see mm-hmm. Monty Rice, and he puts out another cryptic text. Is there something, do you believe there's something going on? Because I look at it from this standpoint. When you start losing, and it's evident that one side is sort of holding up their end of the bargain and the other side isn't, then eventually yep. it comes to head and that's how things are started and things leak out. This to me was the defense getting tired of holding the water when everybody else isn't doing their job. And then when you release people, it's, why did you do that? We're doing our job. You need to be concentrating on the other side that isn't doing their job, because we're seeing the people that are released on defense, but we don't see the guys that are released on offense, and they're the problem.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the response or the posts from Monty Rice compared to Jahlil Johnson, though, are different from this angle. I think mm-hmm. Johnson, I mean, he's back. You know, he was signed back after he made the social post and then subsequently deleted it. Monty Rice, I'm sure, did the same. But he's back, but he was complaining about the offense. I think if you're in the locker room and defensively you're allowing 20 points or less and you're losing game after game after game, that's going to be frustrating. And I think he was echoing the sentiment of many players on the defensive side. Monty Rice, on the other hand, doesn't come across as a guy who wants to come back or mm-hmm. is trying to even portray the idea that he's going to re-sign with the Tennessee Titans because he feels like he was held back. That's the sentiment that he posted for an individual performance. And, I mean, he needs to look in the mirror on that. Gibbons came in and automatically took his spot. Go make a play. Mm-hmm. Be accountable. And that was not the case. He was – I think he was posted more about the fact that he's got a chance to go to a different system and he's finally out of the Nashville locker room. I don't think it was about the offense in terms of what he was posting or trying to direct the attention to.
Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutt, I shudder to think the answer to this here, because I think okay. I know the answer. But what do you think?
They're not going to win another game, Willie.
Well, I wasn't going to go there. But
okay.
What do you think this defense looks like without Jeffrey Simmons the next few weeks here?
That's a huge question. Because what does this team look like without Jeffrey Simmons? I'm watching him from the press box on Sunday. Beyond just his – I mean, he is the most feared player for the opposition in a game plan.
Yes.
It's Jeffrey Simmons. When he's on the sidelines, he is up next to the out-of-bounds line, and he is yelling at the offense, you know, on a third and short. He's into it, and the leadership factor for Jeffrey Simmons in the locker room, echoing the message and trying to keep things on the straight and narrow, on the path, I think that's also imperative for someone to step up, and I don't know who that is, but it's not going to be at the Simmons level and the Simmons importance to that locker room. And this is already a team that, you know, with Mike Vrabel, winning games and how they went about winning close games. And without the leadership factor and the qualities that he possesses. And at one point, I'm thinking that Henry's in that same boat on Sunday when he's out because of the potential of concussion protocol. And they lost the best player, the most impactful player on every phase of their team Sunday. And Simmons is at the top of the list. Tart also gets hurt on Sunday too. So that's a death blow to the run defense. I'll put it that way, because beyond just the leadership qualities and the energy and the focus and the drive of the playmaker, I don't look across that defense right now and find playmakers on a consistent basis other than Jeffrey Simmons.
And I think that sort of sets the table for what's to come here, because
yes,
we're combining the backdrop of what we're talking about, the relationship between the owner, the GM, the coach. We know that at the end of the season, they have major decisions to make. I thought Teron's article really does a great job of spelling out. They have money to spend. They have big decisions to make, and they're going to make those. But can they get through the fire here? Because it's like, of course, I'm thinking of this because it's Star Wars night at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. But when the Millennium Falcon is going into the asteroid field and C-3PO is telling Han Solo, hey, the odds of getting through this asteroid field aren't very good. And Han Solo says, don't tell me the odds. But we know the trouble's coming here. This is going to be a tough thing to get through, and they've got to get through it, and it won't be easy.
Oh, it starts with Miami on Monday night.
Yes.
Ooh. That's the other thing. That's staring you straight in the face after you lose a game that you should have won based on the things that you did well against a team that it's a winnable game on the calendar. And this one, this feels like Philly of last year to me, where you're going into it and you just know the guys on the opposite sideline are going to show up and show out. I mean, we're talking about the beyond just Tyreek Hill and Tua. The running game in Miami with Raheem Mostert.
It's lethal.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Wilson and A-Chain and that whole group. That's where you'll see the impact of not having Jeffrey Simmons, because that's the heart of the defense, and Miami will attack the heart of the defense on Monday night, and it will open up so much in their passing game. It could be a long night. And what feels like, oh, this can't get much worse based on what we've seen in the special teams aspect of this team, I think it could get a lot worse. And that's where you really see the trend of just going down the other side of the hill towards the offseason instead of just trying to maintain and focus and keep that quality about what has been the past Vrabel teams of finding a way, next man up. And there was a romanticism about how Vrabel won games, you know, in Seattle in 21, that Buffalo during the COVID week. All of those moments where, Willie, the team played poor the week prior, and they were the underdog, or they were playing the Kansas City Chiefs, and they just responded in the fashion that embodied what was Mike Vrabel football. We do not see those games from this team anymore, at least not currently. And I think that's a factor that they've got to figure out specifically from the head coach. I mean, he's got to figure out how to get this team playing at least in some way closer to what it used to be than what it is. And let me also just throw this in too, Willie, because you've been around this team. Mace, you were in the locker room. Caroline, you have a good sense for the vibe. There is an underlying story. There's something there that is not normal for this organization behind the scenes. There's a lot of chatter about other jobs or about who's in control. This is not normal for the Tennessee Titans organization. And this has been going on a while. This is something I'm not bringing up now to cause or stir up anything, but I do find it a bit odd that we're still talking about who's in control, who's happy and who's not, and why it's gotten so bad, and what the path is, what's the plan. This is unusual just from the chatter. Normally, it's squashed, it's quiet, and it goes away, if it even starts. And it started, and it just continues to be there, even based on the way he answered the last question today.
Hmm. The Titans are the biggest
underdog. Do you agree with that, Willie?
I would say...
Is this a Floyd Reese, Jeff Fisher type feel to you?
I think the tension at the end of the Floyd Reese, Jeff Fisher was you could feel it a little bit. Undeniable. I would say the lowest it sank to me was when they had the Tommy Smith. Went after Bud Adams passed away, they really sunk to a very it low point. Yes,
but the organization, like publicly and privately, I think everyone knew that was the issue. Like in this case, it's like we've seen what they've done, but what they're not doing now. And there's just this weird vibe and tone to it that they're not trying to put out, but by not doing that, they are, if that makes sense. Hmm.
So going forward, you're trying to preserve the pathway for Will Levis to develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you don't have Jeffrey Simmons. It's going to be tough. They're the biggest underdog in the league coming up this week, 13 points.
I would take Miami. Maybe even an alternate spread.
13's high for an NFL game.
Very high. That's like a college game.
Saving grace is Henry should be available, right?
Well, we hope.
At least you have that.
Yeah.
Get the extra day.
Exactly.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Hutton, appreciate you as always. Appreciate your flexibility today. We'll chat with you next week.
Yeah, always enjoy this, guys. Have a great week.
You too. Appreciate it, Hutton. All right, let's get into your phones on this coming up next. Everything is on the table. What we heard from Mike Vrabel, what we heard from Will Levis, and some of our takeaways from TD's article on ESPN.com. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.